going on, DGen Nation? Kenny Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Wyndham Championship. As usual, I am here with everybody's favorite Canadian, Tyler Tambolee. Tyler, what is up, my friend?
Looking fresh today, Kenny. Love to see it. Love to get into this event. We're going to talk some Tony, two-time and Tony. We'll get there. But before we get into it, want to remind everyone very quickly, this show is brought to you and presented by FantasyNational.com. Head on over to FantasyNational.com/FGD. Get yourself 20% off your first payment. Kenny, back-to-back, baby. Finau, man, I don't know how you could not love this guy. Just an incredible dude. Some of the quotes he had after the win, his family there, him talking about his son at home, all the stuff that just came with it, but just a great performance and got the job done again on Sunday and two wins back to back. What'd you think?
Now, first off, Tony needs to learn a new dance. The Dougie was like 2004 or 2014. You know what I'm saying? Learn a new dance, Tony, because you're going to get more wins. You can see it happening. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The guy coming in back to back wins. He's sort of got that feeling for it now. No problem on Sunday, no collapse, no issues, just birdie after birdie, you know, doing what he needed to do to keep the lead and keep that pressure on everyone chasing him. It wasn't like the week before where 17 probably should have lost, you know, a week before with the water, with barely missing the water on 17 and hitting the driver and hitting it in the water on 18 at the 3M. This week, no issues. Just going there, doing his thing. Third highest green and regulation percentage since 1980. Eight straight rounds of 68 or better. He took the week off to give everyone else a chance, it seems like, this weekend. Yes, please learn another dance, Tony, because you're going to get more wins, and that Dougie is just a little old there.
The story with that right quick is when I went on Sundog's pod for the Open, I picked that as a song because I related it to my bet of Tony Finau, and him and me and Martin had a deal that if Tony had a won the Open, I would have to do the Dougie, the dance for on this podcast. So I said, of course I would, with what I had in on Tony and what I was trying to ship there. He, of course, does not win the Open or come close. And here now is just on a tear. So yeah, learn a new dance. But it's funny too, Kenny, because like, you know, and we've all been part of it about Tony. It's been forever, right? When it was to get that first win last year at the, I think it was the BMW or whatever, that 5-year drought, if you will. And there's some great quotes that always come up now after he starts winning, where it's like back in 2019 when he's like, look, I'm going to just keep putting myself in the position. I know it's going to happen. You know, I got to lose to win type thing. All these quotes that he had even way back then. And now he's starting to prove people that he can do it. But there's just always the stigma when it's been that way for you and what's going to come with it. Like last week, had to talk about it. You just said it again. And I talked about it too, about this 17 and 18, but the fact that he had guys up there that just weren't going to do anything. Piercy had already choked, so on and so forth, but he keeps putting up these rounds. Like even at the RBC Canadian Open, I saw Rick Gaiman posted it today of rounds of gaining 16 strokes or more, I think was the stat. And he's like the only one, Tony Finau, that has done it without getting the W. And he's done it twice, and one was this past weekend, and then one was at the RBC Canadian Open when the guy higher than him on the stat was Rory McIlroy, who shipped the thing. So he's put up these good Sundays. Just some of them are more unfortunate than others, but the Piercy version last week seemed to vault him into a position there pretty easily to get that W, even with those mistakes. And now this week, like you said, I don't care who was up there or who was coming or not, he still had Cam Young, Rookie of the Year, going to be, who crushed all season, adds another incredible performance. Cantlay was doing his thing and made a few mistakes previous days that allowed him to just be a little bit further back than he would have liked, but still put up a crazy round four there to be in the mix. And Tony got the job done, no problem. So it seems as though everything is behind him now, and we're just going to continue to see this nonstop. Not like he wasn't always up there, but still pretty incredible from him overall.
Yeah, I mean, the Cameron Young was a fade for me last week, and it was looking good. Like 24 holes in, He was below the cut line. I was like, okay, this is going to work. And then he holes that out from the middle of the fairway. I think it was like 6 or 7 on Friday. Holes it out and goes 19 under on his next 49 holes to finish in second place. I'm always wrong about him. I'm thinking it can't happen again. Same thing with Tom Kim. I was like, it can't happen again. He's got to have some type of exhaustion. He's been playing so much all around the world. Not missing a week going out there, but he did his thing again too. Cantlay was my guy. I needed him to win. It was one of those weeks once again where I had to sweat my cash lineup, and it wasn't even a sweat for the first 3 days. I was like bottom 15%. Like it was horrible. Like, I was like, oh, I'm going to lose everything this week. And then Sunday, my four golfers that were left go 27 under par on Sunday. And I missed cash by like, I cashed two of the smaller ones, like the $5, but all the other ones I missed by like 2 to 10 points. So that sucked. I needed a Cantlay win, basically, is what I needed. Cantlay win would have vaulted me up there probably well enough. But not the best week, but it's going to happen. It's been a pretty good couple of months. You're going to have some busts every now and then. Tournament itself, whatever. It's not that exciting. I mean, the course isn't that exciting. I liked the week before because of the water. You can get triples. Like, there's no holes to bogey on this. So when Tony was up by like 3 or 4 going into the back nine, I was like, okay, it's almost virtually impossible for him to lose, because unless he does something ridiculously stupid, I mean, he's not going to give up this many strokes. He would have to probably par out, and then somebody else would have to shoot like a 20 or like a 30 on the back to win. And it just didn't happen for that. So, hey, great win by Tony. 2 in a row. We're getting this sort of streaky type golfer thing. First it was Scheffler. Then it was, I guess, sort of Cam. Cam did it more spaced apart. But Scheffler, Xander, Finau have been sort of like the creme de la creme in these short little spurts. Scheffler a little bit longer with his, of course, four or five wins this season. But you've seen these little bursts, and you know, nowadays it's really not. I know a lot of times you used to just fade the winner the previous week, and I think that's gone by the wayside, especially if the guy's an elite golfer. I mean, if the guy's elite, I think Tony's in that conversation. Xander's in that conversation. Cam's in that conversation. Scheffler's probably already there. You know, those guys, if they win, they get that feeling, you know, in the pit of their stomach. They know how to win. They know their confidence is up, and they can go back and do it back-to-back weeks, no problem. I was on Tony last week. Still wasn't enough for GPPs, but, you know, it happens. We're on there this week. It's been good for the last couple of months, and we'll try to end the season strong. How'd you do?
Yeah, a couple of things you said there right quick, and then I'll talk about my week. But the, you know, you mentioned it with the cash game lineup. Like, I don't know if you followed this stuff, but I was heavily invested sort of watching it, trying to see guys getting into the Fantasy Golf World Championship since I was already out. So cheering on guys. You talk like, you know, Gup got in. My buddy Todd, who won the Mega Millie earlier this season, he got in. So was rooting them on down the stretch and just seeing some of the stuff. Gup was actually cleanly in, but my buddy Todd, I was trying to watch for him. And it was like the all four under 70 rounds were, I don't know if you saw this, they were definitely in your cash game lineup, some of them, but like Siwoo lost it on the last hole, Kirk lost it on the last hole, somebody else lost it at the very end that was popular. Like, basically all the most popular dudes lost it on the last hole with like pars when they needed birdie or bogey when they needed par, just little things that just changed the game. That's 5 points right there that you see getting lost. And then on the Cam Young note, you talked about it. He was the second highest guy on the slate. I had to pull it up here while we were talking. 22.55% using Skyhook at Skyhook DFS. His numbers when he posts over like the main $20 last week. Cantlay was 38, 39% round up. So it's like almost half the ownership, but so he's still popular. But the fact that he ended up tying Cantlay with points in the end, that makes a huge difference. And so that vaulted a lot of people ahead as well for that bit of savings. And then lastly, you talked about with Finau and with Cantlay, both of them being right there. The weather edge last week, I'm not sure how much you paid attention to it. You probably saw it some, but the AM guys got like about a 1.5 stroke advantage. Finau and Cantlay, both on that side of the draw, end up being in the lineups that you could just build with these guys that crushed, you know, Pendrith, who else was in that draw? Wyndham Clark, who came T8. I can't remember where Spahn was, but Henley definitely was T10. Stallings definitely was T10. Like all these guys up there, Siwoo, T14, you could basically just build the lineup of the chalk. I mean, you couldn't ship the main $20 GPP, but I regret it because you asked how my week went. I'm out of the Fantasy Golf World Championship. I did not get through. Still happy with how I played. Disappointed. We'll get back there next year. Look to get into the final round to hopefully finally get into that final round. But I was happy with the way I played. I saw the AM advantage. I took advantage of that. I played 6 AM guys. I picked some of the wrong ones. Pan, who did not go well. Denny McCarthy did not go well. So we'll talk about them for this week. Potential flop leg candidates. We'll see, depending, maybe not for a guy like McCarthy. Maybe people just go right back. But an exciting week nonetheless. But the chalk just absolutely smashed last week. I threw up the gif of like Billy Madison pounding the chalk together while Miss Lippy just wipes the glue on her face. I basically said that's me this week because the chalk is just clapping and pounding, crushing all week long, and I'm sitting there, glue on my face, completely out of the tournament after day one when Pan shoots four over or whatever. So I'm with you. Last final comment on the tournament, Kenny. I like the week before better. I'm okay with Birdie Fest, and then I'm okay with the high-scoring affairs. Like, we talk about this all the time. We're good with it. That's the season that we love. And
at least give me a chance for bogey.
But I like what you said, like, about
give me a chance.
Because when we talked about it, the birdies and train wrecks, right, was the comment. Yeah. And that was the quote or the statement from the week before at the 3M Open. I like that. There was still plenty of scoring that week, very similar to this. There was still whatever, but that you could see, like, Piercy up five. Forget the talent level of Finau versus Piercy. Piercy up five after nine to Finau up four with two to play. Like, that's how it can flip there so quickly because of that. And if you get the right names and in the mix and everything like that, that can be a really exciting ending versus, I know we didn't have the talent you may want to see, Finau versus Piercy, but it was still exciting nonetheless. And like you said, here, once it's over, it's basically over. Like, if you got a top tier golfer like Tony Finau up that many down the stretch, pretty hard to see it fall apart. It just sort of snooze your way out of the event and move on to next week.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit disadvantaged. Wednesday night, we just my work. I just won a huge contract, right? Just won a huge contract. I'm the new lead estimator of the company, so it's sort of a big deal. I've been doing it for like a month and a half. I have no idea what I'm doing, but we won. We won. Maybe we're gonna lose money because I have no idea what I'm doing. Anyways, we won the contract. All right, it's a large contract. And so at like 2 o'clock, we found out we won. So me and my boss and another guy, a project manager of ours. My boss handed each $1,000 and we went to the strip club to celebrate. We started drinking at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday, go to the strip club. I almost married a stripper named Poison Ivy. She was beautiful. Something about redheads. I just can't get enough of them. Big fan of redheads. We go there hammered. I get home around 7. I don't make it like a crazy night because I know I have to work the next day and I have to make my lineups. So I get home, get something to eat, and I fall asleep. I pass out maybe like 7:30, like almost right when I get home. No lineups made. I wake up at like 5:15 in the morning, like cold sweat, panic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, oh shit, I haven't made any of my lineups. I'm still on the couch, computer, laptop still on. I'm like, oh fuck. Like, you know, I didn't do shit. So I had to like, thank God for lineup generators. You would have never heard me say thank God for lineup generators like 3-4 years ago when I was handwriting every single lineup I did. But now with the lineup generator, I just plugged it in, but I didn't have enough time to do more research. So I didn't look at like weather. I was like this, like half asleep. This is like, you know, Crown Royal coming out of my breath. You know what I'm saying? And like, I'm trying to make these lineups. So a little bit of a disadvantage. Now it ended up having like, I think I rostered like, I lost a little bit more last week because I went a little bit heavier in the 6K range on the lower 7K range. And I think I had like 18 golfers in the morning wave and like 16 golfers in the afternoon wave. So it was almost right down the middle, but I didn't even pay attention.
You still got away with it anyway. It wasn't like you needed that wave advantage. I just felt like I liked it. And it was funny that you could have just built basically all the chalk guys that played in the morning and for the most part, get them through. I just happened to land on two of the landmines that did not get through and that crushed me. So, you could definitely get away with it, but I forgot about your tweets. I think you moved on from Poison Ivy. You actually had someone.
Yeah. Samantha, Colombian.
Samantha she was nice. Took over. Yes.
She was nice. She was very nice. I like Colombian women. She was a very, very friendly Colombian woman. I had a good time there. So yeah, it was fun. And then of course I had to go to work the next day, but I slept for 10 hours. So I was good. You know, I just, you know, woke up in a panic trying to make those lineups at the last second and didn't pan out this week. I've done that before. I think last time I did, I actually did pretty well. So, hey, you know, it happens sometimes.
Might be the
when
way.
when you live life, you know. Anyways, let's move on. Let's go to the Listener League winner this week. No Avatar. It looks like his name is L. Gennon. L. Gennon was our winner. 663.5 points. Started off with Mr. Finau. 17.5% owned. A lot more. That's right around where the GPPs were. I think he was around 12 to 17%, 12 to 18% this week in GPPs. Cam Young, 20%. Of course, he finished in second. This fifth runner-up of the year. Cam Champ, 10% owned. Finished in 20th. Nice showing. Taylor Pendrith, who another chalk guy, 20% owned Chalk City, hitting it this week, finished in second. Wyndham Clark, one of my favorite plays last week, had a really nice Sunday, finished top 10, minus 17. He was 14% owned. And Smotherman was his low owned guy, 4% owned, made the cut in 69th place. Nice. What'd you think of the lineup?
Yeah, I like it. It's a good lineup. We talked a little bit on it, but like the Cam Young for Cantlay ends up working so that you could get like a lot of people last week had Finau, Cantlay, and then you could get like your chalkier guys, but it would be like Clark, Rogers, Stewie Cink, like guys down low that you had to take a shot on, and you maybe couldn't get to Pendrith. He not only got to Pendrith by dropping down to Young, but also to Champ, who, by the way, made the cut on the number again. And then just goes off over the weekend, 67-67. So Champ has been running good in that department. It's been solid there, but overall solid lineup. Smotherman low owned. Champ came in a little lower under 10% mark. So solid build. And like I said, if you just got Young to come through instead of Cantlay, which he did, then it worked out. So got him into the Tournament of Champions. We'll have, like I said, the prizes, everything announced here sooner than later. But it's going to be the week of the FedEx St. Jude while they're in Memphis for the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that was my mistake because I went Cantlay Willie Z for cash. Mm-hmm. And I thought about Cantlay Finau, but I went with Willie Z thinking that, you know, he's got to get a win at some point in time, and he barely makes the cut. And then you're like, well, this guy sucks at Birdie Fest. And that narrative sort of was ringing true until Sunday. You know, Sunday he goes out and shoots, what, 60, 65 out there, 7 under par on Sunday. So, you know, he can do it. We'll see what happens.
What's the news, like the news saying? Because it segues in. We're about to talk about the course and get into the event. He's here. He's at the top for what we're going to talk about. So good to, you know, start early on it, I guess. I'll just say this. Like, it's what you just said, though. It's so funny because he's so good. Like, it's a shtick. I make fun of it all the time. We get it. We know this guy's so fucking good. But he doesn't win in the numbers. Like, this week, again, 18-1. Tweeted out this morning. Like, he is going to win at a time like this. When it's 18-1, no one wants to bet him. There still are birdies out here to be found. We just saw it, but he doesn't suck. But I'm just saying the saying. He definitely doesn't suck. He's amazing, but he sucks until he finds a putter. And you just said it. When he gained a stroke and a half on Sunday, and he just dominates the field and goes 7 under, could have been better, actually.
Yeah, he could have been way better, yeah.
Could have been like 9 or 10 under, to be honest. Missed some, you know, shorter ones that were like eagle putts, things like that, where it could have just blown up and crushed completely. But, you know, that's the funny part. And that's why it's like, he's going to do it. He's going to find it. Just for whatever reason, he's only found the putter at majors and these faster greens and tougher fields and tougher tracks than he has in the Birdie Fest. And it's also harder. That's why even when John Rahm won the Mexico Open, it's not that he's not good in Birdie Fest as much as other people are just going to find it too and be able to find their way to the top. Everyone's so damn good that it just makes it challenging. And that's what you got to decide on. Again, Willie Z, we're going to get to the course first, but 10-9.
Courses with tougher putting variants, maybe, or tougher putting.
We don't know what it is with him. We know he's going to win. Because but
this week is one of the most three-putt courses on tour. Maybe that's the edge. I don't know. Maybe he has to play some course where the putting is a little bit difficult, even though it's not like crazy difficult here. But there's still a lot of three-putts at this course. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll talk about him in a few minutes. Before we get there, let's get to the course. Sedgefield Country Club, 7,127-yard par 70, designed by Donald Ross, same designer as the course last week. The course has 4 par 3s, 2 par 5s. Both the par 5s are reachable on most and the 2 easiest holes on the course. 8 of the 12 par 4s are in the 400 to 450 range. Course, it's not lengthy, but there are a couple of long par threes. Also, 2 par 4s that play over 500 yards, with 18 being the most difficult hole on the course. So get ready for some cut sweats on Friday. This course is routinely one of the easiest on tour, with the average winning score of around minus 17. Off the tee, golfers see average size tree lined fairways, light rough, and just a few fairway bunkers. Over 70% of all drives land on the fairway, which is well above tour average. This is mostly due to the fact that a lot of golfers take less driver off the tee here. Having the correct angle to attack the pin is of great importance at Sedgefield Country Club, especially because of the undulated and sloped greens. Placement and accuracy off the tee seem to be more important than length, and wayward drives could cause problems for golfers. Even though the rough is not too long or thick, distance control might be an issue since flyer lies are the norm when hitting approaches out of the Bermuda grass. There's a telling stat here on just how important it is to hit these fairways. The green and regulation percentage from the fairway is over 80%. The green and regulation percentage from the rough is right about 50%. Now, you know, I'm not saying don't roster bombers, but, you know, as far as some of these guys hit the ball nowadays, even without driver in hand, it should be much easier for them to hit the greens with a wedge than these stats indicate, especially if conditions are soft. Now, on approach shots, golfers will see small to average size greens that slope from back to front quite heavily. Hitting it below the flag is going to be very important. Some of the greens are multi-tiered, which makes the aiming point a lot smaller on approaches. The edges of the greens are crowned with large collection areas waiting for golfers who miss. Bunkers surround some of these greens, but you know most are shallow and fairly easy to get out from, and there is water in play on a few holes. The greens themselves use Bermuda grass with a stip meter rating of around 12. These greens seem to be the major defense of the course, as there are a lot of three putts here. The Wyndham Championship has been played on this course since 2008, but the greens were switched to from Brent grass to Bermuda in 2012. So course history, guys, 2012 and on, and there is a pretty large course history correlation on this course, probably one of the top five, top 10 courses when it comes to course history and how well former guys who have played well on the course play well again. You see it a lot at this course, more than most. What are you looking for, Tamo?
You nailed it there. A lot of what you said, the biggest one you talked about is those fairways. I know that stat comes up every year, but there definitely is a course history component to this course, more so than most others, because just look at the stuff when we get to it with Webb, Siwoo, some of the other guys that we'll talk about throughout, of course, got it all listed here. We'll get into that, but hitting that, the bogey avoidance is a stat that's popped. Par four scoring, you talked about it. There's 12 of them all within sort of that 400 to 450 is huge. And then you've got, what was the other one I was going to say? The birdies are better, bogey avoidance, par four scoring, and fairways gained or driving accuracy too. If you want to look at it from that perspective, every year, it's just been the same way pretty much for this. It continues to happen. We have a lot of history. So that's where I'll be at. Again, the other thing to always keep in mind here, I'll talk about this quick, is just the weather, same as always, but you know, keep track on as the week goes on. Oftentimes, remember this place, we often get lift clean in place. I'm not sure if we'll see it right away this week, but usually the rain and stuff like that comes up and it's Thursday morning. They're going out with lift clean in place. So we'll see how that affects things as the week goes on, but just keep that in mind throughout the week. Other than that, it's pretty much everything else you already talked about there.
All right, so let's get to these tiers. We actually got a regular, I guess, somewhat.
It's not
regular,
really. It's 10 guys above 9K again.
Yeah, but I mean, there's five of them are 10K and up this time. Yeah. So it's a little bit more close to normal, but still a little bit different. We'll go 10K and up, starting from Billy Ho all the way to Willie Z. Where are you going, Tamo?
Yeah, so we got to talk about Webb first, I think. Obviously, course history king, mentioned it earlier, talked about it already, but just like the dating back, you know, it was the 2011, got his first win here. You'll hear the daughter narrative. He named his daughter Wyndham because of that, but the rest of it, like even, you know, one thing I will note is when he's been coming in with good form is usually what it's been. Webb has not been Webb as of lately. Even last week was like one good day, not four, but look, seventh, third, second, third, a 72 in there, but you know, 6th, 5th, 11th, 22nd with the win before that. That's like, you know, unheard of when it comes down to course history at any given course. We talk about other guys at certain courses. Nobody that I know of has history like this at a particular course. So definitely that, you know, that's going to be an important decision to make. One interesting note, and I'll get your thoughts when you go in a sec here, Kenny, but I don't know if he'll be as popular as you would expect or usually. He's up to 10-7. People have gotten sharper, like you mentioned. It's not just about course history. His numbers on the projection sites won't be as strong. Like people just don't like him from that perspective, which sets up a lot of people using optimizers, like you mentioned, MME, stuff like that. And then on top of it, there's new guys in town, like Zalatoris, right? People want to talk about him. I think we'll mention it. He's not going to be super popular at 10-9, I don't suspect. But you mentioned it before, and we talked a little bit about it. I could definitely see it at an event like this. The stats look pretty good. Bogey avoidance, approach, fairways doesn't hit as many as you'd like, but again, he can find his way around that here. Total ball striking, just everything else that's going to go with it, obviously is going to make sense. Maybe those greens, like you said, is the factor, and that could be it. Obviously at 18-1, or some books have it even, you know, higher than like at 16, 14, whatever, I think there's going to be something there. PGA Splits 101 actually tweeted out today that the last 11 winners, the biggest odds have been JT Poston at 40, the rest have all been like 30 and under. So it's like there's no long shots really winning tournaments anymore. They're coming within, you know, the range. You can get them on each ways, top fives, top tens, whatever. But the winners are not long shots. The last 11 events, I think we could see that again here. A couple other things. So Im and Horschel, I think Im will end up getting the ownership because people don't want to pay for Horschel at 10-3. But it is interesting that Horschel sort of still rates out to me very similar. He has the course history, but because, like I said, people don't go with that all the time. So he's second, sixth, 11th, fifth are four of his last five results. Four of his last five results here. And then you go to the stats, fairways, solid, greens of regulation, strokes game, par four, bogey avoids. He's like in top 10 and everything. But I think when you've got Lowry, Im, and Webb right there, and then you can drop down. Don't forget about Henley in the next range, which we'll go to in a second. I think there's still a lot of, you know, people that will just have to overlook. It'll be balanced for ownership somewhat, but I do think that's, you know, just guys that you can then pick your spots. I kind of like Horschel, Im, maybe even Zalatoris. Happy to leave Webb behind this week at 10-7. I think most will be, and you'll take the risk, but he has been in much better form, Kenny, coming in. So what are your thoughts on Webb? And then what are your thoughts on Webb ownership? Because I think people have just gotten sharper, and I don't think he will be the Webb ownership of old.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not going to be super high owned, then I might have to think about him. When I first made my cast lineup, I had Webb first in my initial cast lineup with no research, just putting, you know, players in positions in the lineup. Webb was the first person that clicked. But after a while, I thought about it. He has been playing very well. And I compared him to Shane Lowry. And in my model, Shane's number one by a lot. And he's also been having a much better season than Webb. The form is good. I think it's more likely that Shane Lowry wins this event than Webb Simpson at this point in time, just the way they're looking and the way they're playing at this moment. So I went Shane Lowry as my first cash game cornerstone this week. I still don't think going Webb is wrong. I think it's definitely a play, but I went Lowry. His form's been really good this year. Bunch of top 10s, bunch of top 20s. You know, a win seems like it should be coming for him again. Was his last win still the Open Championship? Was that his last win on tour? I mean, that's like,
it's been a while.
A while
ago. Yeah, he had all the close calls this year, right?
Yeah, you would think that, you know, it's about time.
I forgot Straka stole the Honda from him, right? Right? Remember the bad weather picked up for the drive?
That's what I was thinking
of for a second.
That's right. So I went Shane Lowry as my first, and I'm going back to Willie Z again this week. I mean, just talent level, he's got to win at some point in time. Showed something on the weekend on a birdie course. Maybe since this course's biggest defense is the putting greens, maybe he can get major mental ready with his putter and get a little bit better on a course where ball striking, he should be the best in the field. So give me Willie Z and GPPs. All right, so let's move down to this 9K range. My second cash game cornerstone is going to be Russell Henley. You know, good showing last week. He hadn't played that much. Prior to last week, he played the three lap majors prior. That's it. So I don't know what was going on with him, but he looked good last week. Finishing in 10th place, back-to-back top 10s here, his last two times played. Again, we're looking at the course history thing. Lowry has a couple of top 10s at this course as well in his career. And Henley, of course, is number two in my model. So we're going model heavy this week. We're going Lowry first, is the first in the model. He's the first cash game cornerstone. Henley's second in the model. He's the second cash game cornerstone. Those are the ones I'm going with. I like Adam Scott. He should have won last year here, either last year or the year before. He played pretty well here recently. Give me Adam Scott at that price. And is Hatton going to be low owned? If Hatton's going to be low owned, I'm going to play Hatton as the low owned play in the 9K range. Lots of birdies. His putter's good. 400 to 450. He's very, very strong. Three putt avoidance is there. We'll see if he likes the course. I don't think he's ever played it before, so that's always a worry with Tyrrell Hatton when it comes down to the course. But I think I like him as my low owned guy in the 9K range that I'm going to play. I like Henley for cash, and I like Adam Scott.
Yeah, I've got Hatton as a miscut in 2016, so he's at least seen it.
Okay, he's played it once.
Way different. I don't care about the result. It's more just say he's seen the course at least. But a couple notes. Yeah, Scott. It was last year, right? He missed that 4-footer dead straight, 4 or 5-footer, whatever it was. And then there was like a 6-man playoff after that or whatever that, you know, ended up being just insane. You know,
oh, yeah, my boy, too. I'll probably play my boy right here.
Oh, yeah.
With a little H3-3 action. I'm wearing his foundation T-shirt for all the people that are listening on the podcast. So I'll throw him in there as well.
Yeah, he looks good. If he can find some fairways, too, I think he just sets up well stats-wise, otherwise perfectly. So I don't hate that call. One thing back to Willie Z for just a second is that, you know, the price tag, like you talked about, but, you know, the playoff run that he's, you know, wanting to get on. He can vault into the top 10 this week, which is, you know, nice when you're trying to come towards that. But I think it could be this week or next, Kenny. The funniest part will be is I'm going to be in Memphis next week still. And what if he wins when I'm there after all the shit that I talked all season? Because 18, I still can't get there this week. I was teasing it out on Twitter. But next week with the stronger field, right, I think you could see maybe 30, 35. Maybe it's the first time I bet him all season when I'm there and I can be there to root him on to get the W. We'll see. Maybe he goes back to back like Tony, wins this week and next. Who knows? I am thinking it could be, if it's going to be, you know, it would be so funny that either the last regular season event of the year or one of the playoff events, because don't forget last year's playoffs was what? Abe Answer. Where's his win at? We said, oh, he gets where it was a WGC for him. I can't remember exactly where it was, but Finau was a playoff event after all that time. So maybe it's Willie Z getting his first, you know, but we'll have to wait and see on that. In this 9K range, I think Henley will get most of the love, and rightfully so. He was right in the mix there last year, too. If you don't remember, on Sunday, everyone remembers the Adam Scott thing, but Henley pretty much blew off what could have been a win for himself as well. So people are looking for Russell redemption out there this week at 9,800. You talked about Scott being right there. People might go there, but the range is so small. I kind of have interest in Corey Connors. He actually rates out very well for me. Fifth in
bogey. I was thinking Connors or Haddon. Those two guys are going to be overlooked, I think, right?
I think Connors comes in higher owned, but I think it's, again, probably for good reason. And who knows how much when you got to consider Henley and the 8K range, which we'll get to, which I think is loaded this week. Not necessarily that I want to play them all, but I think others will. And then you go up top and people are going to pick. It's just going to be balanced ownership up there. But Connors, fifth in bogey avoidance, top 20 in birdies or better in fairways, and then seventh on approach, first in greens in regulation, ninth in par four, and second in ball striking. Solid in that 100 to 150 range. Like, he can still find his way around this course, and 9,600 is probably a fair price. So again, it just doesn't look like it because of what we've seen from him as of late, but I think it's still an interesting number. He has seen the course three times, not the best results. Miscut last time out 2 years ago, but still, I can go there at 9,600. I have no problem with that. 8K range though, Kenny, I'll let you start it, but I think there's a story to be told for pretty much everyone in here, maybe besides Bez and Justin Rose. I mean, maybe you have a story for them, but I think there's a sales pitch you could make for everyone in this range. And I think other people will like this range. So, and we saw it last week where you could build like Finau or Cantlay, play like Webb, Henley, Siwoo, sort of $7,900 to $8,300 range, and then drop down to 3-7K guys. I think people saw that work, even though Cantlay Finau and Cantlay Young and those Finau Young lineups got there. I think people still see this build again because the 8K range has names that you can go to. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, my third cash game cornerstone is going to be Siwoo. Two top 15s heading in here. Two top 10s his last two times playing here. You know, form is there. He loves the course. Stats don't line up, but they never line up for Siwoo. You know, he's not like a stat guy. But you know, he plays well, the courses he plays well on, this is one of them. So I'm going to go ahead and use that. So three guys, 8,800, 9,800 and 10,600. So, you know, I'm going to have a low shitty freaking punt 6K play that I hate right now, but I need to go low. I need to go low to fill out the rest of my lineups. You'll hear it. So, but I'm going these three guys up top, Siwoo, Henley and, Lowry, because I think the upside's all there. We've seen it. You know, 6-6 is rare nowadays. I would say 70% of the time, it's less than 10%. Would you agree with that for cash? I would say 70 to 80% of the time, it's less than 10%. So, if you get that upside with these three guys, maybe the punt play that I pick later on, which is definitely a punt play, he misses the cut and I can maybe go 4-6, 5-6. And with the upside I have, still be able to cash. That's the way I'm thinking about cash nowadays. Getting 6-6 is just difficult nowadays. It's tough to do. It's tough on them cash streets out there. But I like Siwoo. He's going to be my third cash game cornerstone. I think Penrith is a fade for me this week, just because you lose the best part of his game. You know, he's one of the longest guys out there. He could go out and try to just bomb the hell out of it if he wanted to. I mean, these young guys do whatever the hell they want out there. There's no way. They don't think about history. They don't think about the way the game used to be played. They go out there gripping and ripping, which is, you know, fun to watch. But I just don't think it's going to work on a course like this. So Penrith is a fade. I like Aaron Wise down here. Again, another guy who's been, you know, on the verge here. He's probably had one of his better seasons this season. Stats line up. His iron game is exceptionally strong. Tee to green, very good. Makes a fair amount of birdies. Really good on par fours. So give me that. And then I'll go JT Poston. You know, first, second, miscut, 11th in his last four starts. Former winner here. 8,100 seems like a fair price for JT. What do you think?
Yeah, this range, like I said, you could talk about all. You mentioned the Siwoo Kim factor. So Siwoo, you know, just to name it, second, third, fifth, miscut, and then goes back to 2016, first win here at age 21. You know, funny enough, so, you know, Tom Kim, another South Korean, 20 years old, looking for his first win, is also in the same range, $200 less, and he's been playing some really good golf lately. What, 7th, 26th, 3rd, 3 of his last 4 results. Like, and
it's like 8 weeks in a row? Is this his 8th week in a row?
No, I think he's going up 5. People said that last week too. He had a break before he started in Scotland. So I think he's fine. Again, he's also 20 years old. Like, he's going to be able to find his way.
Yeah, it's only 5.
Think about Sungjae was playing, what, 35 events or something? Like, you can go find your way around.
And Sungjae also here,
we talked earlier, 24th, 9th, and 6th. Like, you know, you can find your way around this course, and the young bucks usually do, and you can get your first win at this course as well. So Willie Z, Tom Kim, we're talking about these guys. This is a spot. Webb picked up his first win. Siwoo picked up his first win. There's a bunch of others. I'm just saying in general, thinking of it from that perspective. But I think Denny, people may or may not go back to him because you have Siwoo and Kisner right there. But Denny, 4 straight made cuts here with a 15th, 9th, and 22nd in the mix. If they're not going back to him, you know, like Flop Lag, when I talk about it, it's like everyone was on a guy. They get off of him the next week and then say, oh, of course he does it this week when I'm not playing him. If he's going to be 20% owned again, like he was last week or whatever it was, then it's whatever. You're either on him or you're not. But I just think that's an interesting tidbit around Denny McCarthy. He's got really good course history here. Not as good as Siwoo, who's $100 less, but it's pretty damn good. And it is a course that sets up well for him. So I bet him. We'll talk about that later, but Denny McCarthy and 8,900 interest me. Talked about Tom Kim, Penrith. Not so, like, again, it's more of if the ownership goes off of him because people just think he's going to cripple after last week. I just don't think that's going to be the case. We talked about with winners going back to back, things like that. I think these guys are just better than that now. He definitely made some mistakes on Sunday, and it looked like the pressure got to him a little bit, but it also could have been a bad first round and then 3 good rounds to get up and finish in that spot over the weekend. It just looks worse when you're going from the lead to dropping back. So see how people take that ownership in and go with it. I like Harmon quite a bit, A300. I think others will too, but I just think in general, stats-wise, the course setup, numbers, everything, like, he's first in strokes gained par 4, 9th in fairways gained, 11th in bogey avoidance, sort of all the big 3 that I'm looking at. So I really like him. And then Davis Riley, Wise, you talked about too, Post. I mean, I guess you could talk about all of them. The ones I have more interest in would be like Wise, Harmon, Tom Kim, and then Siwoo and McCarthy. That'd be like the 5 that stand out. Riley, though, is interesting if people are finally done with him. What do you think on him, Kenny, with Davis Riley? Because 16th in bogey avoidance, 2nd in birdies or better. Not the best with, you know, fairways middle of the pack, but the other stuff, like good hitting greens, good solid par 4 score. Not the best with the wedges, though, in that 100 to 175 yard range. He has not been the best, at least I'll say that. So, but are people done with him now that he's down to 8,000?
I don't know, man. That guy gets big numbers like it's his job.
He really does.
I mean, on Friday, of course, I had him in the lineup, in the GPP lineup. It ended up being okay. I don't know how much it would have mattered, but like at that point in time, I had like 1st, 2nd, 6th, 8th, 8th, and like 7th. And then Riley, who was there, he was like 5 under. He was like, you know, top 25 on Friday afternoon. And he gets like a 10 or something on some par 5, like randomly.
It was a 9 and it was bad.
I don't even know how he did it. Like, there's no holes in that course. I guess that was the only one because there's actually was water there, I think, or something. rock outline. I don't even know what the hell happened. They didn't show it on TV. I just looked at it and I was like, what the hell? He went from 500 to 1 under and missed the cut and killed me. So yeah, a little bit of bias there probably on my half. We'll see how I think about it on Wednesday night when I actually pick my pool. Yeah. But right now I'm just pissed at him, so I don't even know if I can get on him. But the guy can make a birdie. He can also make triple real fucking easy, which killed me last week. So right. I'm not sure. Let's go to the 7K range. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely guys up there. I'll probably go back to Hubbard. You know, iron game's there. Three-point avoidance is there. Give me a little bit of Hubbard. Scott Stallings is playing some of the better golf of his career right now. Like, I mean, like, I don't know, like five top 15s or something like that in his last eight events. Don't quote me on that, but it's something sick like that that he's been playing. I mean, why the hell not at that price? I don't see a problem. The only problem is I think his course history isn't the best here. Adam Long, another guy, you're going to get a top 20 or a miscut. You know, it's worth it. GPPs. It seems like this course could be suited for him, especially with the amount of par fours here and the amount of 400 or 450 yard par fours, which he's very good at. So I like Adam Long. Munoz in a birdie fest, always. I'm always back on Svensson. I can't get off of him. He's like crack cocaine. Svensson is my crack cocaine. I can't get off of him. I'll smoke him every week.
Yeah, and he did his job to suck you back in, right? He ended up having a decent week, so you get back on him here. So we've got a lot of the similar guys in this range. Definitely back in on Hubbard. I think everyone will be. This is, if they're not going to be in on Denny, I at least think they'll be back in on Hubbard. He still profiles well, the stats set up. Anybody who followed, you know, some of the stuff last week, he had actually been on a podcast the week before last and said that he was in a party house with Joel Damon and Ryan Bram. With no family, like he was just there to party. He said, I'm gonna warm up, get ready for the playoffs, and that's sort of how I'm gonna do it. That's gonna be my warm-up event. And he said, fantasy players, he quoted, fantasy players, don't play me, don't bet me. Then he goes out and hits the hole in one off the worse than Hideki type club, like drop the club. Like, it was like there's no way if you're standing there watching that, you're like, oh my god, where did he hit it? And then it goes in the hole like that. And everyone thinks it's the nuts, and then he goes and misses the cut. So just one of those things, the way it shakes out. But I think it's good to get back on him here. I think he's ready and good. Got it out of his system, all set to go here. So I like that. I like the Munoz call. I like the long call. You nailed it perfectly. It's like, you know what you're getting. It's boom or bust. And that's what we want in these tournaments. So don't be surprised if he's
like the white Siwoo Kim.
Yeah, except he's got better stats on paper. Like, if you look at the stats on paper, they are good. He hits fairways. He avoids bogeys. Solid hitting greens. Solid par four scoring. Decent from 100 to 175. He should profile well, but I don't think as many people will click him as the guys like Munoz, Hubbard, Keith Mitchell, Goddard, Vegas, Svensson, Todd. There's just so many names around him. So I think he is an interesting candidate to be in your GPP lineups, to stand out and be a little bit different. If he busts and shoots over, it's whatever, but you took him for the boom, because when he does boom, he can win. He's won before, so he can definitely do it again. Go down from there. Goddard, I don't know what to do with this guy, man. Like, it's another guy that reminds me of like the Riley factor. I keep going with him and does enough, like Svensson even, like kind of the same thing. And they're both right there in the similar price point where you're playing them just because their name, their value, what we've seen from them lately, their upside, but are we going to get it? You don't know. So it's another boom bust play. I actually feel better about Adam Long for the $100 more. And then the other guy I like, I played him a couple weeks ago at the 3M, was Brendan Todd. And he did his job, got through, came through. I mean, when you look at his stats, they're going to line up because it's what he does, right? Hits fairways, solid with those wedges, you know, make sure, you know, doesn't make a lot of bogeys. I think he makes some sense from that perspective, but just don't expect a ton of upside. But I mean, I bet him at 70 because I just think it could be possible. He's the type of guy that can find it. I don't expect it going in. Who do you got in this bottom 7K range?
I like Patrick Rogers, 7,300. I mean, the guy's, you know, gained strokes. He's known as the putter. The putter's his big thing. That's what his weapon is. But he's gained strokes with his approaches in 8 of his last 9 events. Gained strokes with it off the tee in 6 of his last 9 events. The ball striking looks like it's coming. It's there. And you throw it out with one of his, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 strokes gained putting weeks. You know, it's possible for a win. Of course, I wanted to win because I rostered him in that draft that we did at the beginning of the year and everyone made fun of me, which, you know, it hasn't been that horrible of a season for him. I like Patrick Rogers at 7,300 this week. I'm going back to your boy CT Pan, who screwed you. A shorter course with only two par fives. I'll go with CT Pan there. That price, Harris English, you know, the old, we called him the new Webb Simpson last year. Had his injury, is coming back, trying to get his feet underneath him for the talent level that you know that you had just less than a year ago, where he was winning tournaments, winning multiple events on the PGA Tour. Give me Harris English at $7,300. Give me him at 130-1 as well for a long shot. JJ Spahn, really good from 150 to 175. Strong showing last week. I like JJ a lot also down here. Who do you like?
Yeah, I like the JJ Spahn call. One I didn't like, the go ahead.
Got a couple more. Lee Hodges.
Yeah.
Lee Hodges has been playing really good golf. Lots of good finishes here recently. Matt Wallace seems like he's found something at 7K. He even said it on Twitter. Said he, something clicked in his game. It's coming back to him. At 7K, I'll take that risk based on his word, which we know you take with a grain of salt. But at 7K, you take that risk.
Yeah, well, one, I was just saying, one I didn't like was the Patrick Rogers one. I don't know if I'm going to chase that just because going back here, you know, Bermuda greens, something that usually he's not very good on. You look at his worst two.
He still gains strokes overall in Bermuda greens. It's his worst putting surface, but he still gains strokes overall.
Yeah, even at the Bermuda Championship, he came, but this is way back when. No, he came fourth, so he can find it. It's just his two worst putting performances this season are the Honda and the, I think the Phoenix Open was the other one, and they're both on Bermuda, right? So yeah, so two of his worst, again, like he lose almost two strokes on those. Just again, I think he had a great week, so people could see this.
I just think his ball striking has just been so much better. That's what I'm keying on for Patrick Rogers. I mean, gaining strokes with his approaches in eight of his last nine events, that is not a Patrick Rogers thing.
Yeah, that's another reason. You can always take the other side of that argument and say, so another reason to get off of him might be because that's not a Patrick Rogers thing. But yeah. I hear
well, if it was like three of his last four, but eight of his last nine, that's fairly large sample size.
Yeah, I totally get why you're going there. Like I said, I see it on paper. I just, like what I said, when you look at it too, the other thing is it's like 44th, missed cut, 30. Like these are just not phenomenal results when you see what you're going to need. You saw last week the Taylor Moores, the Jaggers, the Clark, the guys that come through, they're getting top fives, top tens, whatever it might be, that are coming through on the scoring sheet and on the actual leaderboard. So the leaderboard is relating to scoring, obviously, in these situations. That's what I'm talking about. But one guy I didn't mention at 7,500, Alex Smalley, it'll be brought up to this week. I believe he's a member at the course. All the connections get brought up. I don't really go into that stuff as much anymore, but I do think his game suits the course well. I know others are going to talk about out there also. So he's a fine play. Martin Laird, I think CT Pan, I'll go back to the well. I don't care that he hurt me. I can go back there again. So I like that call. Ches Reavie is like same as Brendan Todd or, you know, those types that you play at these courses where, you know, just keeps getting a little bit cheaper and you can find the same dude that does all the same stuff with the same stats. So I like Reavie. I don't hate the English call, but you know, seven straight made cuts here for English. That is pretty interesting. He's got the great course history. CT Pan's history is not bad here either, actually. And then JJ Spahn, I liked your call there. Aaron Rye, 7,200, just playing the talent. I talk about it all the time at 7,200. I'll definitely play him. Who else? There was two more guys I had. I think Neesmith. It was a couple weeks ago. I think he didn't come through for us, but you know, just in general at 7,200, I'll take a shot on him. And then Duncan and Lipsky were the last two I had here, Mark, just to round out the range that I have interest in. Again, guys that just feel too cheap for what they are that can actually score on a, you know, on these courses. So I don't mind them. Do you like any Fowler? Fowler, I don't know if you saw this last week, Kenny, but they removed the suspended players from the FedEx Cup standings. And so now Fowler went up from like 132nd to 123rd.
Oh, so he's
actually has a chance to get into the playoffs now, but he still has to do his job this week. I know that narrative and we throw it out the window all the time. Some go up, some fall out. That's why I don't care. They're all motivated that are close. They want to make the money.
I used to think about that. Let's talk about that for a second. I used to think about that motivation, trying to get into the top 125. You see like one or two guys.
But it's because it's bullshit. Maybe three. Because it's but the whole point is like they're all motivated. If you're outside, you're motivated to get in. If you're inside, you're motivated to stay in every year.
I'm not paying attention to any of that this year.
It's the worst one because there's no, like they all want to get in and they can't. So even though you'll say, oh, that narrative did come through, these three guys ended up getting in. Well, do me a favor, buddy. Go check who fell out. three dudes fell out to make the spots for them. So it's like the same thing every year. But my point would be with Fowler, it's been a while, man. He needs some friggin' motivation of some kind. He needs something to happen good, because nothing good has happened and it just keeps falling out and everything. And it's like, man, this could be your chance to at least get in the playoffs and see if you can do something or make some noise. I don't know what you think on him, but usually doesn't even play this event by my number. Like I don't think he's usually here, is he?
I don't know.
Past he has. So he missed last year missed the cut. That's why. Before that, he didn't play it since, 2016 when Siwoo won? So 22nd place. But yeah, he usually doesn't have to be at this event because he's priming up for the playoffs by skipping this event. Not the case anymore for Mr. Ricky Fowler. Any love for him? And then if not, take us into the 6K range.
Yeah, I don't know about Ricky. I'm probably going to pass on that. Let's go to the 6K range. A couple of guys that do like up top. Rory Sabatini, course history nut, loves this course, plays it all the time, plays well here all the time. I'll throw fire at him at 6,900. Hayden Buckley, game's been turning around here recently. He went through a little lull. He was played really well in the fall, went through a lull in the beginning of the season. Now it looks like it's back up. He's making a bunch of cuts here recently. He's playing a good game. So I like Buckley at 6,900. I actually like him a lot. It'll probably be my highest owned in the 10K range. John Ho, I can't do it as good as Pat. I can't do it, but I do like John Ho, probably the best golfer from 150 to 175 in this field in the last 50 rounds. I think he has pretty good course history here as well. Sam Ryder in a birdie fest, 150 to 175, real strong. I think he's fourth in the field in the last 50 rounds. And then my cash game cornerstone punt. I got to go low. If I'm going 8,800, 9,800, and 10,600. I got to go super low. I'm going Jason Duffner. I feel sick saying this. But yeah, $6,200. I think he's made 7 of his last 8 cuts here, 2 out of his last 3 on tour after missing like 27 cuts in a row. So yeah, so I'm going there just because I need someone 6,200 or below to fit, to make sure I still have room. So my cash game cornerstones this week: Lowry. At what, 10,600 was that the price? 10,500? Hold on, let me double check here. So 10,600 for Shane Lowry, Russell Henley, 9,800, Siwoo Kim, 8,800, Jason Duffner, 6,200, still leaves you 14,600 to fill out the rest of your lineup.
Yeah, the D in Duffner stands for dumpster, and you definitely dumpster dive this week to go down and find him.
Yeah,
I was just looking it up. Like, I knew about his course history. So it's, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the last 9 or something made cuts, only one missed cut. And the last two years he's played at 24th and 31st. The issue is right now he's going on 8 missed cuts of his last 10 that he's played.
He's made 2 of his last 3
with a 69th and a 20th. You know what I mean? Like, nice. Some bad results, but yeah,
I'll take a 69th. Give me a 69th.
For cash, you'll take whatever.
That's all I'm asking for.
You could see it even last week. Guys did, this is an interesting note to just go. You don't have to go with Duffner with Kenny's pick, but just that's for cash. I'm saying in general, a lot of guys took Sung Yul No last week at 6,000. He got an eagle. He put up some good points. He put up 39 DraftKings points and missed the cut, but he made your Finau, Cantlay, Pendrith. You had the whole night. You had everybody in there. And there was guys that put up very big scores that could have won qualifiers. Like, you could have won tickets with these lineups, and some of them put up like 650 with a missed cut. So it's like, I think you needed like 720 to win the main, so you weren't getting there. But I'm just saying, you can find your way around these parts. And if he made the cut, he was going to score huge, and it could have been big time. I know there's a lot of people out there listening or watching that probably had some Sung Yul No lineups that were 5 or 6s because of him. So I don't hate it. The one note too, you're just going through, I know you don't care, but just so people follow this, it reminds me of like when we use Fantasy National and the stats, like last 50 rounds, where you look at it, and I always talk about this, where it's like, yeah, but the 44 of the rounds are from before all these missed cuts. And that's why the stats look good on paper. John Huh, for example, good history. People say he's made 6 of 8 cuts here. He's a great course history guy. You're like, okay, let me look at this. Missed cut last year, didn't play it at all the 2 years before that, missed cut the year before that. So it's his 2 missed cuts and not playing at all over the last 4 years, and then a 63rd, 59th, and 57th 4 years ago, 8 years inclusive. Like, that's where it's like, is he a good course history guy because he made 6 of 8 cuts here?
I think the one thing that I looked at him more was the 150 to 175, because you're looking at like 40%+ of all your approaches come from 150 to 175, and he's been one of the best in that range in the field.
I agree. I actually like him better if you want to play it off the stats perspective. I'm just cautioning people when they're going through course history or seeing a tweet about it or hearing about it to actually dig in a little deeper, because it's the same thing as what we talk about with the stats, where there may be more to find when you go through it. So I try and look at it from a little bit different perspective. I love your Buckley call. Another guy scores, goes low on easy courses. I think more go to like Lee Hodges and those guys up above. I think if you just drop down, he's basically the same dude. Sabatini is interesting. 4 top 10s. In his last 6 outings here, you already talked about course history. That's it. But just to point it out, that stands out for me here. Lahiri is actually 3 for 4 made cuts here, but having himself a much better season all around. I think, again, you got to just consider what you're doing here if you're going to this range. But let me just check his real quick while I got it up here. But 46th, 53rd, missed cut. It's not the best, but 3 of 4 made cuts, kind of like what I just talked about. So if you believe in the talent this year like you do with John Huh, he's another guy that you could go to here. Chesson Hadley, potential flop leg. He's 5 of 6 made cuts here. I think his results are actually better if I pull those ones up. It's 15th last year. Before that, it's not great, but at least he can show some upside, you know, good on these greens. And then on top of it, he hurt some feelings last week. So you can go to him. Who else do I have here? Oh, two guys at the same price. Who would you pick between these two, Kenny? Lucas Glover or Ryan Armour? If you had to pick one, you can obviously play both, but they're pretty much.
I like Glover. Glover's again, once again, 150 to 175, his strength. I'd probably go Glover.
Yeah, he's not bad. Like I said, I think they're both interesting.
North Carolina guy too, I think.
Yeah. I like the Ryan Armour history better. He's four years in a row made cut. This is where I'm talking about where you want to go and look into it. 25th, 22nd, 8th, and 4th. And then when you look at his stats, obviously they're going to pop for some of the stuff that we're looking at, right? If you go down to Ryan Armour, 2nd in fairways gained, 26th in bogey avoidance, in the top 25 for par 4 scoring, ball striking, and 125 to 150. So I think he's pretty interesting at 6,700. And then going down from there, man, I don't think I have anything else, to be honest, Kenny. So we'll see as the week goes on if I can find a punt. I thought about the Duffner one, like you said. Roger Sloan showed up last week. He's interesting. Sung, you'll know who we talked about, he's back in the field. Norlander, but probably can't make enough putts. Ben Martin, maybe he played good last week, but really, Kenny, we're just talking about names for the sake of talking about nothing else for me.
Yeah. Same. Buckley's my favorite play in the 6K range, just no doubt. All right, so let's go to bets. I have a lot this week, and the reason I have a lot is because I've been stuck at 4 wins all season. And I'm trying to get 5. I don't want 5. So I got like 10 bets. But 6 of them are over 130 to 1. So a lot of long shots. So first off, I'm going Shane Lowry at 12 to 1. Adam Scott, 25 to 1. Henley, 25 to 1. Scott Stallings, 60 to 1. Lee Hodges, 130 to 1. English, 130 to 1. Steven Yeager, a name we didn't mention, but had a really good week last week, 130 to 1. Taylor Moore, another good guy, had a good week last week, 130 to 1. And Patrick Rogers, 150 to 1.
Yeah. We talked about that little tidbit off the top with these long shots not hitting, but you've got some good guys on the card at 12 and 25. So 33, like numbers like that. I think that's what you could see. So I went with Harmon at 35. I went with Denny at 45. Those are sort of my guys up top. And then for a little bit longer shots, Todd at 70, Smalley at 90, and then Buckley at 125, just 5 bets as of now. Probably put some first round leaders in. I want to wait and see what the weather does. Probably add some more. I want to see what the numbers do. But for right now, that's where I'm at for the card, 5 bets total.
Yeah, one and done. I'm probably either going to go Lowry, Henley, or Adam Scott.
I'm going to click a button of whoever I got left. We talked about it last week, the strategy. You know where you are now. You need the most money possible. If you're, you know, in a spot where you think you're blocked and that you still have time for the playoffs. So it's up to you. I think you're still trying just to stack the most possible. If you've got multiple lineups up there, you can now start to decide if you want to pick 2 different guys and try and find your way up with at least one of them. It's decision-making time. I will say that, but I don't even know who I have left, but I definitely cannot cash. So I don't care.
There you go. All right. I can actually cash in both of them. In the Mayo one, I'm like a couple million behind cash, maybe like 1.5 behind cash. So that's doable. And then I'm in 66 in the carbon contest one. So I'm in.
You got to pick winners. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Pick winners.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find my article on GupsCorner.com. Use promo code Kenny. Save yourself 30% on a membership to Gups Corner. Congratulations to Gup for making it to the Fantasy Golf World Championship Finals. Tambo.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Toetag and Tambo. Make sure to add me there. Put out the tidbits every Wednesday. It's the free, you know, basically a compilation of all the free content around the industry. Put it into one thread where you can find all that. Probably 10 or 11. It's been that way last few weeks just because it's slower. The content's down. People are not doing as much. They're not as into it. We're using that for an edge to find as much as we can in other ways. If you want to check us out at rumpuresports.com, got a premium show there we do every Wednesday. You can use promo code DEGEN50, DEGEN50. Get 50% off your first payment. All sports, one price. The Wednesday show has the final weather, ownership, roster construction, player pool breakdown, pretty much everything that you want for building your lineups for tournaments to try and win those six-figure prizes. So check us out over there.
All right. Should be a fun week. Last week of the regular season. Always a great course. Always some drama here at the Wyndham Championship. Learn a new dance, Tony. Let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.
I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Stacking penny stocks. Sipping on Ciroc, trip 'em up.